And now, ladies and gentlemen, for the handful in attendance and the millions listening on the web on skidrow.la, this is Matt Time Radio.
All right, everybody, we're back. Matt Time Radio is live again. I'm Rich.
I'm Crail.
And we're coming to you from the new studio here in beautiful downtown Los Angeles.
Yes, sir.
Finally back after a long break, but we're good to be on the air and talking to you about today's fights.
All right.
So we are live and we want to hear from you. So you can call in the show at 1-800-893-9562, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter, and we want to talk about the fights, everything MMA, jiu-jitsu related. And
don't forget karate.
Don't forget judo. Judo know what we're going to be talking about.
Yeah.
And we do got an exciting guest in the studio with us today on our little round table going on here. Who do we got, Krill?
Yeah, we got a BJJ black belt under the BJJ Revolution team. Tony Pasensky. We like to call him Little Tony. Say what's up, Tony.
How you doing, everyone? Thank you for having me.
All right. Welcome.
I almost feel like we all need nicknames now because he's got Little Tony. We'll find out why they call him Little Tony. I'm just going to call myself Queasy.
Whoa. Okay, or Holy.
Queasy.
Just getting to last night. Wow, what an exciting round of fights last night.
Yeah, I mean, good fight. Did you see it, Tony?
No, I was in another event, but I know that the fights last night were amazing, and I'm sorry that I missed them.
Yeah. Where were you at last night?
I was at Respect in the Cage in Pomona.
Oh, yeah.
Was that out of the Fox, or where was that one?
Yeah, Fox Theater.
When I rolled up, Don Fry was there with his cowboy hat.
And oh, yeah.
He's been training a little bit with me, get back into his fight game, and I knew I was in for a show that night.
Is Don Fry still rocking the mustache, the Magnum PI?
Oh, it's tight. He's got that. A lot of mustaches in Southern California. Not like Don Fry.
Yeah.
You know what, man? I seen a picture with you and him at, because you're over at Elite Training Centers, right?
Yes.
All right. So I seen a picture of you guys, and he's a big dude, man.
Yeah, he is.
Oh, he's solid.
That's a big dude.
Right.
Yeah. So I just seen that picture. So I was like, that's a big dude. We had some buddies over there fighting at Fox Theater yesterday, too.
I only saw the main event, which was a part of in the ring.
Oh, okay.
The Joe Camacho fight versus Christos. And it went 5 rounds, and then we came out on top.
Nice.
Unanimous decision.
Oh, okay.
Oh, right on.
Well, shout out to Christos, right?
Yeah, Christos. He's the light heavyweight champion.
Nice.
Very nice.
So Don Fry, is he still fighting, or he's done, huh?
No, he's got something coming up. He's training. He's getting back into it. He just had some back surgery.
Oh, okay.
But, yeah, he's at the tail end of his career, I would say.
A little rematch against Don Severn. That'd be pretty sweet, right? They'd be like,
that's exactly what I was going to say. Well, he's going to go the Don Severn route because he's just, you know.
That'll be like 5 1-minute rounds.
Yeah, I think they do have it. He told me they're going to have 3-minute rounds. I said, well, you got the Masters division, so it's the old timers.
Wow.
Hey, nothing wrong with the Masters.
Great sense of humor, though. Good guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, the last time I saw him fight, was actually a few years back. He fought this guy they call him Predator. He fought a King of the Cage.
Don Fry?
He fought King of the Cage the same day Charlie Valencia fought Uriah Faber, their first fight out in Globe, Arizona.
Okay.
That's when Charlie was, making his comeback, and that was quite a drive out there. But, yeah, he was actually on that card, too.
Well, that's where he lives, right?
He's from Arizona.
Yeah, he's
he
from Arizona.
He comes out with his truck, and it's Arizona plates.
He does?
Yeah. I don't know. I just got a lot of information with that.
Yeah, it's a nice 6-hour drive.
He don't care, man.
Yeah.
Showing up to fight that guy. He's a big dude. I see that picture. I was like, that is a big dude.
Yeah. Training, he's a solid guy. He does a lot of his technique, like jiu-jitsu-wise, like on the mat is, I would say, a lot of like little catch wrestling moves. Like he's just looking for some submissions and
he's
getting back into it. And, the punching and the, you know, the martial arts and jiu-jitsu, it's like the person puts their weight on you and they put the wrist across your neck and the forearm, and you can count that. But when Don does it, it's solid. It doesn't move.
Yeah.
Very.
So it's a little bit different.
Did you guys make an exception letting him on the mat with his boots on, or what?
That's funny, man. No, he's got to take his boots off.
Yeah. Hey, so before we dwell into these fights, maybe you can tell us a little bit, I mean, let everybody know a little bit about
your background.
Yeah, your background and why they call you Little Tony. I know you're probably the story everyone always asks you, why Little Tony?
You know, started jiu-jitsu in 95. I wanted to do jiu-jitsu because I saw Royce Gracie, Ultimate Fighting, and I sent away for his instructional tapes, and I got on the mailing list, and Philadelphia had Steve Maxwell, who's pretty much known for being the first American black belt under Helsing Gracie. And he was a personal trainer back then, still is. Now he's really heavily involved in kettlebells. And they were like, yeah, we have jiu-jitsu there, the real thing. And when I showed up, Steve was the purple belt. He was one of like the only instructors on the East Coast at the time. Phil Miglerice, who's a black belt now under Helsing Gracie and the Miglerice brothers, they were all there and I trained there. And I was the littlest guy on the mat, you know, 130 pounds, 16 years old, and Little Tony. And got very technical. Moved out here to Southern California, Torrance, California, to do instructor's training under Horion and Royce Gracie with a one-way ticket, $1,000 in my pocket. 2 years later, I was still Little Tony at the Gracie Academy when Royce gave me that name and, kept it going.
He didn't give you a Brazilian name?
No, Little Tony.
Oh,
It just it stuck, and it was good. worked out. But, moving forward, that 5 years, moved in, got moved back to Philadelphia, did the whole college thing, got my degree. And met Rodrigo Monderos in PB in San Diego after 10 years of training. And I joined his team. I had my brown belt for 2 years. He made me keep another 2 years. Someone was going on my brown belt for 5 years. He finally promoted me to black belt in 2004.
Hey, you know, the crazy thing about that story is, like, obviously now, you can go on a website and put in jiu-jitsu and do all this stuff and download videos on YouTube. But, like, back in 95... I mean, there probably wasn't much going on. You're talking about almost at the infancy of jiu-jitsu, man. Yeah. So that's a pretty big move, right?
I remember the first website, and when I started jiu-jitsu, like, the internet was just starting. There was no YouTube. There wasn't even an internet. It was just getting started.
Chuck Norris hasn't created it yet, huh?
No, but Chuck Norris was doing jiu-jitsu back then. He was on the cover of the magazines with Machado, and I said, that's what I want to do. And I remember looking up the Machados, like, they're in Redondo. I pulled up an atlas out of a book. I go, where the hell is Redondo at, so...
Yeah, back then you had to pull out your Thomas Guide to go anywhere.
Yeah, yeah. 674B2, right? So what'd your parents say about all that stuff?
Jiu-jitsu, that's the first thing I ever wanted to do in my life for myself. They could see it was a passion. And I wasn't allowed to go down the city by myself, but I said, that's got to change.
Yeah.
Come from the suburbs and, white boy.
So did you want to do it for any, when you go to black belt ceremonies, like we were just at one, but everyone's got a story, and like Joel Tudor's story is pretty crazy. And Emily, the girl who's there, her story was really crazy.
Story was emotional.
That was a crazy story, but
crying.
Yeah. Well, I mean, did you have a story like that? Did you, you were up in Philly and somebody stole your cheesecake or something? somebody said, give me that cheesecake sandwich.
I don't know. I was always the smallest one in my social group.
Uh-huh.
Like, my friends were tough guys, and I tried to stay out of trouble. But I was just really into the team sports anymore. I was really good at everything I did, and Street Fighter 2 was a very popular video game. And then one guy, a crazy guy, he lost, and he picked me up by my neck and headbutted me in the face, like he rattled me. I'm like, this guy's crazy. So I mean, if there's a moment in my life where I felt like I got to know how to do martial arts, it was probably after that. And, I had wrestled at different camps and did karate, and then jiu-jitsu just seemed like a logical fit. And it all came at the right time. Like, there's a reason why Royce Gracie's very popular and Ultimate Fighting blew up. Everything happens at the right time.
Yeah. I mean, he's obviously the pioneer of the sport out here, And
for sure.
Yeah, that's a cool story, though.
Yeah, for sure.
No, my story is much like jiu-jitsu is like a form of knowledge, and you can build off it. So it's the first thing that I really learned how to do effectively, and then... No, when I went back into college, I had missed like 2 or 3 years because I was out here in California surfing and doing instructor's training. And, I had learning disabilities and everything from education. So it was a big deal for me to, go back into college and relate to jiu-jitsu on all my classes and then graduate with honors. And then, now I got my degree and my master's degree in education.
That probably helps out for a lot of the other stuff you do on the back end, which is marketing and instructional DVDs and all that other stuff you got going on too, right?
Right. Learning how to structure content so people can understand it, be entertained by it so they're not bored. Right, Rich?
Right. Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. No, especially how, just media is changing and, the way people get their information now. you know, a lot of the ways we used to get information is all dinosaur. We're just talking about, you know, like just, you know, the common things that we're used to, phone books, you know, a landline telephone, just the way that we keep in touch with each other. It's all, you know, it's all changing. And just like the sport of jiu-jitsu, you got to evolve and you got to adapt or, you know, you're going to be left behind.
Yeah, trying to get that information out to whoever wants it right away, right? Because, I mean, the window's pretty small.
It is, and it goes in full circles, too, like the seminar yesterday and content and all the new guys that are starting out, how fast they're learning, and even people that are just starting martial arts and jiu-jitsu today, if they're a little bit older. There's been a lot of things that happen, and we have to, you know, reserve our history and make sure that, you know, we know where things are coming from.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a great sport for any age.
Yeah, and a lot of these kids now, we're kind of seeing that, you know, in the very near future, we're going to have this generation of kids that are going to be true mixed martial artists, where, you know, how so many of us come from one style or one background, and we have to kind of build off, you know, that base and stuff, where a lot of these children are very, very, you know, well-rounded. We're going to see a lot. I think the fights are going to be a lot different, too, when you get these kids that have been training MMA specifically, you know, since they're, you know, really, really young.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you get to absorb everything when you're young, you know. Take me in my mid-30s. I'm like, oh, man, I should have wrote that down.
Yeah, not anything like my story where I started training when I was 30. And, you know, first martial art ever. And, you know, it's just, yeah, it's a different thing, you know. Or looking at our, you know, like just our friends and people in our own, you know, training camp. You know, like, for example, like Noah Tillis, you know, Noah's been, you know, grappling since, you know,
he's 7 or 8 or something like that.
Yeah, he really, really grew up in, you know, in a sport. And, you know, he's looking to do big things very, very soon. And another young person that's, you know, just ahead of the curve, you know, doing his thing.
Yeah, so you're over in, is it Manhattan Beach now or Redondo Beach?
Redondo Beach.
Okay.
Yeah, I came back to Redondo because that's where, you know, I did a lot of maturing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm out there doing jiu-jitsu, program director at Elite Training Center.
Okay.
And, you know, working with them, building their program. So, among other things.
Yeah, they do. I know I've been by there once. They do some Krav Maga stuff over there. And
right. It follows what Rich just said about how the little kids and the youth and the teenagers are learning everything. Yeah. There's MMA, there's Krav, there's jiu-jitsu's in the program. Mm-hmm. And they're just learning it.
Like, hope you're not teaching them the growing strikes, though.
They are learning that stuff.
Is that really true, Krav Maga? Everything starts off with a groin strike?
My first class, I did, yeah, they were doing groin kicks. And I got kicked in the groin recently.
You didn't wear a cup, man?
No, I'm not. I wear my gi pants. I'm doing jiu-jitsu, and then I jump in and drop in.
Let's see, what you got to do is go back to your jiu-jitsu pants from 95 where the crotch was down to your knees.
You MC Hammer style?
Yeah, throw them off a little.
Yeah, my lion kimono. I still can remember the smell, the natural color.
Yeah. Lion, Krugen.
Shoot, I wish I had my Krugen still. Dude, I have a Krugen now, but I don't have the pen.
I still have one. It'll sand down the paint on your car, that thing.
They were rough back then.
They are, right?
Yeah, they were. And they still are if you can. But yeah, they're Krugens. But you say Krugen right now, I don't think anybody knows what that means.
No.
Heard the name, don't know anyone that has one.
Right.
Yeah, I got one. I actually had two. And then what I did is I took one and it was already torn, so I cut the lapels off. And I use the lapels to do pull-ups because it strains your grip, right?
All right. We can talk about that. Grapple Grip is one of my sponsors.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so that's definitely need grip strength in jiu-jitsu.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I know. Mr. Gorilla Grip here.
Man, I...
He has a strong grip.
Yeah. You try to pull your arm off, I'll take your sleeve.
That's cool. You mentioned the Krugen, so we got to have a revival so Krugens. Maybe we can start a fan page on Krugen.
Yeah, well, they have one, I don't know, man. I don't want to say I'm a traditionalist, but I like the simple geese. You know, I don't like all the crazy stuff. You know, but the Krugen's got the tribal bands, and you're just like, that's so ugly, dude.
Yeah, before the first Krugens that were coming out in 97, uh-huh. They didn't have the tribal band. So when they went that way, I was like, there's always another gi anyway. But
what's it like? There's one gi out there, like,
I see, you know, they even had like across the back, it looked like you're wearing a tram stamp with your gi on and stuff.
That ain't right, dude.
You know, I was like, nah.
No, I don't want to talk bad about Krug and Kimono.
It's a good gi, man.
They were great when they came out, and everybody wanted one, but you couldn't get it because it was in Brazil, and you had to have a friend, and then you're at a tournament, and they're like, you want to buy this Krug? And I'm like, man, I don't have $120. You know, and then you look at who's trying to sell to you, and I'm like, I know who that guy is, you know, and it's like, I would love to be like him one day, you know.
That's kind of like the buzz that was going around too, just even, you know, recently, well, not too recently, but remember the Lucky Gi. The Lucky Gi was you know, ooh, the thing to have, you know.
But that's like 200-something bucks, man.
But I'm saying, you know, a lot of money for
What do you think about that? I mean, I know you don't want to upset nobody, but like...
No, hell, if we're going to do it about it. I mean, my sponsor right now is Kauai Kimonos. So I like my kimono from Kauai.
You know what? I did see that you were in that blue one that had
everyone holds it and they're like, man, it's unique. It's unique. Like, yeah. Look how light it is. I'm like, yep. The boys from Kauai, they developed something. They're the lightest ripstop gi in the world. But it's not like official. You couldn't wear it at a tournament.
Yeah, yeah. I heard they're going away from ripstop pants too, right?
Right. So it's, you know, you have.
Yeah, I hate ripstop.
But look, all the gis that are. Coming out now, the companies they come up with the different colors, and people, you know, when those tournaments begin in Southern California, the lines line up, you know, to pick up the newest trend of gi.
Yeah.
So,
You know, it's probably like when you get a new set of tennis shoes, you think you can dunk the ball. You're like, dude, you're 5'6", you ain't dunking the ball.
Yeah, or I like that parody that Ken Promola did on the fancy gi and stuff. I don't know if you ever saw that one, where he's wearing his old, you know, gi that was a gift. And this guy's like, oh, I'm rocking the latest, greatest gi and this and that. And he's getting tapped out like every 2 seconds. Like, oh, yeah, I really like your new gi, man. You know, it helps me tap you out quick.
Yeah, that's true. Well, that was, I mean, we're going to do history of the gis. When the Howard Combat Kimono Gi came out, they came out with a double weave, like really thick collar. Uh-huh. So everybody started buying that because they wanted, you know, it was making hard for the collar choke from the front, X choke.
Yeah,
and then I remember people having to take those gis off during the jiu-jitsu tournaments.
Oh, because they weren't
they were that thick.
A lot of Brazilians were like, "No, you got to take that gi off. Like, it's not official." But we didn't have the official rule.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's just whatever was coming up. It was just the sport was changing with the gis, and it just kept going.
And yeah, IBJJF still, you know, they're very strict on their gi requirements and stuff.
Very, very strict.
Well, they're getting strict. Like, I heard they're only doing black and white for black belts now at tournaments.
Okay, yeah, they're doing the white and blue for everyone now. Mm-hmm. I guess white and black would be appropriate for the blacks.
I think it was white and blue.
It was the black white and blue?
Yeah, I think it was white and blue.
Oh, okay.
I was
just throwing people out there. I thought it was, is it white and blue?
Well, I know, according to Rodrigo, you know, remember he said, beginning of the year, IBJJF is going to go back to, you know, a new set of rules. Some are new, some are old rules coming back. So I guess we really have to, you know, stay tuned to, you know, the upcoming set of like changes is coming around for the next year. So yeah, don't quote us on it yet.
Yeah,
you know, just check out the IBJJF website, you know, next year. But I was working the event at the Nogi Worlds and, you know, yeah.
But that's Nogi.
Well, even to give you an example of how strict IBJJF is with rules, you know, as we're talking about rules, you know, they're talking about, you know, uniform rash guard color. You know, patches on your shorts, not enough black or not enough blue, not enough this, you know. I've seen so many people get turned away.
Yeah, my belt was, I had an old belt.
Oh, yeah.
And it was just, the guy told me it was too old, you got to get a new belt. So now I go, well, I got one in my car. And I'm like, well, I got to run to my car. He's like, well, you can go upstairs and buy one.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there are people taking their gis off. Patches were getting ripped off because of the placement of where the patches were. Some of the gis had a mouthpiece holder on the inside.
Yeah, yeah.
They were
ripping those off. That blue belt color was too light. Too light. So you got to get a darker blue belt. And all the stuff was upstairs. So it was like an assembly line. You know, we just want to compete. We paid our fees. We dropped all our weight.
Yeah, that happened.
At the last second, like, oh, man.
Yeah, that happened to me at the Pan Ams because I was wearing a corral belt. And they said it was too light.
Exactly.
Right. And so I said, hey, go get a new belt upstairs. And you're like, oh, man. You try to ask everybody.
Yeah, you know, hopefully you could find a teammate or something, you know, that saved me in a bind once where, you know, my I pulled the loops on my, I pulled a drawstring on my gi pants and snap, you know, and sometimes those things happen, but yeah, definitely we gotta be on the lookout for the new sets of rules that are going to be coming out.
Yeah, I would love to hear if we have any callers call in about what are their gripes about the IBJJF.
Everyone's going to have them, right? Yeah, well, you know, speaking of that, what time is it? We're probably almost getting ready to take a break, though.
But, yeah, we got a little bit, but yeah.
Yeah, but I was one of the things I know this year at the Nogi Worlds, right? You were at.
Yeah.
There was a lot of people getting DQ'd for reaping. Yeah. What do you think about that?
You got to protect your athletes. People need to understand the rules.
Yeah.
The footlock and you, when you're at the, it's all about like where you're at in the level. Like if you're at the higher level black belts, there's like a panic pain right now. Like let us reap the knees because we know what level we're at. We can protect ourselves. We know the risk.
Right.
Let us do it. But the development belts, they can get injured so easily.
Yeah.
A footlock can turn right into a knee lock when you start reaping the knee.
Well,
so
you know,
soon.
And I heard actually something you said somewhere where you were talking about. You've got a 50-50 instructional DVD, right?
Yes.
And you were talking about it's better to know about it so if you get caught there, you don't make the wrong move and get yourself hurt, right?
Right. I mean, exploring the position 50-50 guard without the gi or with the gi, it's very important to understand the rules.
Right.
And when you're in a position like that, the 50-50 guard, you know, a lot of people don't explore it. So a big guy can come up and hurt your knee from the bottom. You know, you're trying to get the best knowledge. So, and you're moving around really fast, things pop. Like Chris Cowboy. He's a friend of ours from the team, and his meniscus popped when he played 50-50 guard, and it happens. So when you're in position in the academy, you have to know how to get out of it at least, or explore it to learn how to do the heel hook for MMA or no gi.
Right.
And then when you have the gi, you can't do the heel hook, so you got to understand the rules of the advantage points and the sweep game.
Right.
And then ultimately, then you can call it, is it a stalling position or not? And with the sport evolving and the position evolving, it's not a stalling position anymore.
Yeah.
So know it or you're going to get beat by it.
Right on.
Yeah.
So we're going to take a quick break and we're going to be back with some more Mat Time Radio.
From the missing.
All right, everybody, we're back.
Yes, sir.
And I want to remind everybody, you can get this show on iTunes. You can also check out the Facebook page. Check us out on Twitter. And for all you tech heads out there, you can find us on Stitcher.
Stitcher Radio.
That's a new one to me.
Yeah. And now you can listen online, skidrow.la.
And don't forget, we do have the Skid Row Studios iPhone app for the low price of free.
$3.99
all day long.
Yeah. And we're back. We got a little Tony in here, Tony Pacinski, in studio guest.
Then we left off on the 50-50 position and getting into some real details, some good stuff. I'm actually really intrigued. You know, at my belt level, I really don't work that position yet. But some good information.
Yeah, I've seen the DVDs, you know. So I think the only thing I picked up on is how to get out of it. So,
well, okay. I guess that's really important. I mean, you know, especially when you feel, you know, the pain of a leg lock, or a lot of times they say, you know, like in a knee bar and this and that. When you start to feel the pain, it's already doing damage.
Right. Yeah, the inverted heel hook or the heel hook, and that's what I've always been told. By the time you tap out to a heel hook, the damage has already been done.
Yeah.
And, you know, I guess the most important thing really is too, you know, to stay in this game and, you know, so you're able to train and, you know, of course injuries happen all day long, but we want to try to minimize them and so we can keep doing what we love, you know?
Yeah. So I think we were asking you if you thought that they should be allowed, or reaping the knee should be allowed. I mean, you think those things should be allowed as black belts?
That's a tough one. I mean, I don't think reaping the knee should be allowed. No.
No.
In a tournament.
I mean, because I heard something like over 50 people got DQ'd at the last tournament because of reaping.
Wow.
You got to look at the matches. I mean, sometimes people can, as they get better in the sport, they can take the person's foot and pull it.
Yeah.
And then the other person gets disqualified, you know.
Yeah.
So that's happened to some of my friends that play 50-50 guard. Mm-hmm. And I understand when you're in a match and you're trying to make transitions from like X guard to something to a leg lock and the foot goes over accidentally. But 50 people, that's a lot of people to get DQ'd if they understand the rules.
Yeah.
So.
But, you know, sometimes it happens so quick. I mean, it's obviously it's up to the referee.
And the referee's he's just perception.
Doing their, yeah, they're just doing their job to protect both fighters as well. So if they see something, I mean, there's no instant replay in jiu-jitsu.
No.
Although there should be sometimes.
Very true.
Sore subject. Yeah, we're talking about a little incident at a... Look, I'm putting my wife on the spot here.
Yeah, a little tournament incident.
Arm fully extended, but, you know, no, I didn't tap.
I didn't.
It was a verbal tap?
No. Ref stopped it.
Yeah.
Safety of the competitors.
Yeah, see?
Hey, live to train another day. There'll be another tournament. There always is.
Man, and then you watch that, what's that judo girl's name? Rousey? What's her name? The judo chick.
The girl in Santa Monica?
Yeah.
Fight for Strike Force.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Did you see her last fight?
I just saw some clips on her because she's starting to become more popular.
Well, her last fight was Friday, I think it was. And, you know, she's won every fight by armbar.
Right.
And she, I mean, took the girl down, sat on her. I mean, armbarred her. The girl, you know, tried to fight it by coming over. She had inverted armbar. And when she turned back over, the ref stopped it. She dislocated the girl's elbow.
Oh.
It was so ugly, dude. Like,
yeah.
It was ugly. I mean, she tried to roll out of an armbar, though, you know?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's awesome. If you win an MMA fight with an arm block, you know, any type. I like to see the technique, but anytime I see things like a heel hook or a leg lock, I turn away. I still got that look.
Yeah. You ever been injured with any of those moves?
I've had a lot of injuries in jiu-jitsu.
Knock on wood.
Thank you. Mainly my knees right now. My meniscus and a lot of accidents. You know, you wrestle around with wrestlers and they pop your knee and it's like, but you know, that's the thing. If you want to do this martial arts for a long time, you have to be very selective with your training partners and, you know, stay away from some dangerous moves.
Well, and, I mean, I agree with that because sometimes like, I mean, I just got injured. It's been like 4 weeks now that somebody tore my IVT band with a reap. Right. But like, and something inside, and it was during open mat, and I was just like, man, I shouldn't do it, you know? And then I just went and trained anyway, and that happened to me, and you sit there, and you're like, man.
Yeah, one more wave.
Yeah, and it's rough, man. It's a rough injury because it's soft tissue, you know?
Yes.
So,
Well, we have instructors need to protect their students, and the rules are in the rule book for a reason.
Yeah.
And you know, you start getting outside the rule book and getting into the mixed martial arts and the no-gi, it's like now we're playing in a different platform.
Yeah. Right. I mean, there's so many different techniques that come into play, since a lot of us do rely on the gi grips and stuff for control. But yeah, one of the nastiest things I've seen actually live was with Joel Aziz against Zandi, and he popped his knee, and it was we heard it pop.
Yeah, I'm glad you say that. Not that it happened to Sanji or like anybody,
but
you know, when you're in the audience or you're at a competition and these guys are competing on the weekend, like the Weekend Warriors, and their knee pops and it sounds like a crisp bat snapping.
Exactly.
It's that loud. Everyone goes, ooh.
Yeah. Yep.
And at that moment, that's when people need to really realize like what we're doing and how important rules are.
Yeah.
And let's protect the fighters.
Yeah.
And he flinched and he sucked up that pain, but it was actually a match for a $10,000 purse for a grappler's quest.
Now I feel it's different.
Yeah.
Now I feel like he should be able to sweep the knee or leg lock because they are fighting for money, the pros, and
yeah,
they know the risk. So I can see where the black belts are saying, let us reap the knee. And, you know, but there's no money involved in the IBJJF, if we can go back to that topic.
Right. Well, but
it's an amateur sport, ultimately.
Right.
So they're not pros.
The other thing you have is you have the adult black belts, but what about like the senior one or senior two guy who just does it for fun, really? I mean, you get that old really are doing it for fun. Right. Not necessarily fun, but because they love the sport, right?
Right, because we want to compete and
right.
We want to keep doing this. And you know, when you're doing a no-gi tournament, like we just said, and there's $10,000 involved, that's a lot of money for a grappling event.
Yeah.
It's very difficult to raise money and funds for events and stuff like that. But
yeah,
there is a lot of money being raised in the IBJJF with all the ticket prices and the fees that are involved. And I feel like some of that money should be distributed towards the pros. And then we can get into the topic about steroid testing and all that other stuff. And
well, let's get into it. No. First of all, we'll ask about fees because I look at fees sometimes and I go like, I mean, I wrestled through high school and college, and even when you did wrestling tournaments, you're like $30 four matches, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
double elimination,
running on time though, and you're talking about 6-7 schools in there, 13 guys on a team, not even including JV and everybody else. But I mean, you look at ticket price now, $100-something, right?
Right,
$100 early registration. Yeah. I mean, I think that's a lot of money.
And single elimination.
Yeah. Single elimination, and, you know, we're fighting for medals.
Yeah. And a shirt.
Yeah, but the shirts are sometimes bad. And we have enough shirts. We have a lot of shirts.
Yeah, look at this one.
Yeah.
Oh, no, wait, 1 year I got a beanie.
You did? Oh, that's right. That's right.
They got Pan Am's.
And a magazine.
Yeah, and a magazine.
Yeah, there's a lot more that can happen. And there's a lot more organizations that need to be, you know, we look at models like the wrestling model for the prices are a lot less. You look at judo competitions and you sign up $50 for the year and, you know, you can have access to insurance.
Yeah.
Okay. And then Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu is just some different sport.
Well, yeah. I think Grappling X actually, I mean, they're on the right path as far as, you know, at least a lot of their tournaments now are, you know, double elimination.
Yeah, it's like $40 and you can do two in your division and two in open. That's four matches guaranteed for $40.
So I think they have the right idea and they're trying to be in tune with what, you know, the fighters want, you know, and everyone competing.
Right.
So, you know, hats off to them.
When I was younger and in Philadelphia, we did two tournaments called the Soul Cup 1 and the Soul Cup 2.
Okay.
And Soul Cup 1 was a basic no-gi tournament, and I just wanted people to have experience. So it was like that white belt, blue belt thing. And then from the experience I gained from that, I did the team tournament, Soul Cup 2, and it was a invitation tournament. And it was 3-3-3 or a 5-5-5-3. Bring your best 5 white belts, 5 blue belts, and 3 purple belts from different academies. And I was in Hawaii recently last year, and there was a guy from Philadelphia who was in Hawaii studying. He said, "I was in your event, and I loved it. I had like 6 matches, and the way that you won the event determine how many points you got for your team. So it was really a team thing."
Yeah, that's kind of cool.
And it, you know, you see those things in wrestling, but you know, everyone got a T-shirt. I got really good sponsors, and it was like a local thing. And I put all the money back into the event.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at the end of the day, I made some money, but it was more like I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
And yeah, you can definitely distribute where the money's going. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. So, do you think the game would be different if they had submission only? Do you like submission only jiu-jitsu as opposed to
time limit versus no time limit submission only events? It's a tough one because when you have no time limit the jiu-jitsu stylist. It's like who is the better jiu-jitsu,
right,
compared to who has the better game and the better expression. So you put a time limit in there. It's, you know, conditioning, endurance, all these other attributes that are not really jiu-jitsu.
Right.
But, and I played both.
Yeah.
So it's okay.
I mean, do you have a preference for one? Or do you think, or maybe there's a fine line between both. Let's say, I've heard that some people do no time limit or no points for the first, you know, 4 minutes or whatever.
Right.
And then points afterwards, which would be kind of cool, right? Because if, let's say.
Like Abu Dhabi.
Yeah, like exactly. Let's just say it's a 10-minute round. In the first 5 minutes, no points, nothing, just straight submission. Because after that, if you're going for the kill, you're going to be tired, right? So then the next 5 minutes is who's got the endurance and who's got...
What? Yeah, it's interesting to watch. And then you see like that time frame in the beginning, like, people go for it. They go for the submission. That's where you actually get to see, like, if we can say, like Margarita.
Yeah.
That guy, you know, in 2000, 2001... was the guy that, it doesn't matter what time it was, he would just go for the submission. And his expression of jiu-jitsu was like, I want to be like that guy. Because he'll be up 4-0, mounted you, and he's still going to attack. He never stalled. He just went for it.
Well, it makes perfect sense, especially with tournaments like Abu Dhabi, since everyone is just on that level, that, you know, they're going to have to be, you know, looking for a finish. If not, it's just going to be a technical game back and forth, and, you know, it just can keep going and going, and, you know, where's it going to end, you know? But yeah, definitely, I think it would make sense, at least for the black belt division, you know.
Yeah. And we get to that, and what do you think about testing? I mean, you think it should be tested?
There's no money being made. So there's no way that people will test. But you can do individual testing. There's like
just by looking at them? Like, hey, dude, how do you get six packs on your ribs?
Here's my point of view about this. When I first went to Brazil, like as an American team, I was like 1999, and I'd never been to Brazil. And a lot of like our American team, we just had the perception of just being bigger people. Like we looked bigger compared to the other divisions.
Okay. You
know? Maybe that was nutrition or just the way we are in our culture. But the athletes were smaller than us at the blue belt level. And then when they were purple belt, the guys were all jacked. And I was with a couple doctors, and like the steroids was right there. Like I would walk into academies, and they were shooting it in the locker room. And I had these like virgin eyes. I'm like this young, you know, guy. Like what's going on here?
Yeah.
So it's definitely in our sport. And when we have like athletes that say, you know, I fight for technique, and these guys are doing steroids, there needs to be testing. It definitely stirs a debate. And if there's kits that can be. If you're going to win a medal and you're going to get all this prestige, why not take a test afterwards?
Right.
Yeah.
And if it's $100 for the test, then it should be, you know, let's legitimize it. Let's legitimize the sport so there could be some more money made for the athletes.
Yeah.
At least the people that are black belts or the ones that are winning division.
Right. The guys that are they're looking to build a reputation for their schools and things like that. You know, those are the guys really, I guess, they would have more of a motive to, you know, want to do something like that.
I agree, but there's a lot of people that can build their schools with medals and trophies, but they can't build their schools marketing-wise or from a business standpoint.
Well, yeah. I mean, I know what you're saying, because if you think about it, I always tell people, like, if there was two schools by each other and one guy's got first place on every medal, world right. champion this, or the guy down the block is like, hey, man, I got fourth place at every Pan Ams, man.
Well, it's
right?
It's more of a
prestige thing, right?
Yes.
Right.
But you're absolutely right. And I always tell people, some people are great athletes, but they're not great coaches. And some people are great coaches, but they weren't great athletes.
Right.
And very, very seldom do you find a great athlete who's a great coach.
True.
Right. Because I think it takes a different mindset. Some people just explain stuff really well, but when they get on the mat, I mean, you know, they just don't do well. But it doesn't mean that they're any better or worse.
Right. So. Well, just like how we were talking about, Not to put too many names in the mix there, but I think it comes down to giving your people what they want. Like where there's one gym, you know, gym A is across the street, and they say they have jiu-jitsu, but it's non-contact. And then, you know, another school B opens across the street, and is just taking all that overflow, and they're laughing and they're cleaning up because they're like, haha, you know, they can't train the way they want to over there. Right. Well, guess what? I'm taking all these people.
Very true.
So, and actually, it looks like we're going to be taking another break, and we're going to be back with some more Mat Time Radio. Hi, Everybody, we're back.
Yes, sir.
And remember, the phone lines are still open. 1-800-893-9562. You have any questions for myself, Krill, or Little Tony, we're here. We want to hear from you. But besides that, we still got some interesting talk going on.
Yeah, we were just having a good off-air topic discussion on gyms, you know, gyms that let you spar and gyms that don't let you spar, and you know, trying to keep your new guys or the white belts that come in, keep them healthy so they,
right,
you know, so they appreciate the sport. Are you got any take on that?
Oh, I have a lot of take. You know, when we started jiu-jitsu, it was sink or swim. You go in there the first day you're sparring, and there's a high injury rate for anyone because they don't know how to do anything. And I was talking to Rodrigo Banderos Friday night, and he's like, look, you can't just roll up to Sunset Beach and know how to surf. Like, you're not in Hawaii. You just can't drop in a wave like that. But you got to go to your local breaks and learn. I'm like, yeah. And Rodrigo is like, yeah, I've been doing this for a long time, and you know, I want to change the white belts. I want them to learn technique and then gradually start sparring. And I go, Rodrigo, I'm really happy that you're admitting this and you want to do this, because this is the way it's got to be right now. And mm-hmm. a lot of the gyms are doing that, you know, all over the United States now.
Yeah, I mean, we got
retention too. It's about retention of your students also.
Of course, that retention of your students to play a part in, so they don't get hurt and they're learning something. But it comes down to this. When people start martial arts, there's a lot of reasons to do it. A lot of people say, like, I want to fight or I want to get self-confident. Let's just agree that people don't know why they're doing it.
Right.
And they just, if they're there long enough, they'll eventually learn what it is or it'll change. And if you can't have someone in your school long enough to find that mark, then they're not going to become martial artists. They're not going to become like the jiu-jitsu guy that's doing it for their life. Like I'm ride or die when it comes to jiu-jitsu. I've been in it for the long time.
Well, that's kind of my story too, where I started at a Muay Thai gym and I wanted to fight MMA. And I said, I need to take jiu-jitsu as just to have some type of ground game. I got in the door and my first night I got triangled by a girl that was,
sounds like my first night too.
About 100 pounds. And after that, the only thing I wanted was to earn my Brazilian jiu-jitsu black belt. And that's been my only goal since then.
Right. That's it. And then we have this dream of becoming a black belt. And along the way, we have our little benchmarks of the belts, and it's wonderful.
My story was different.
I'm a stud already.
Shut it, man. I always think it's funny because I tell everybody, the reason I got into jiu-jitsu is because when I graduated college, you wrestled, there was nothing else to do. You can be the wrestling coach or that's it, right? And so I said, I couldn't call my friend up and be like, hey, dude, let's roll on the mat, right? Let's throw our singlets on and roll. And you're like, sounds a little odd, man. So jiu-jitsu was a good transition.
Right.
But like the whole sink or swim mentality, sink or swim, it applied to me because I went in there, man. I got beat up my first day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, wrestler, you leave your neck out. I was getting guillotined. I was getting I was getting beat up. And I can understand if you're not in the right mindset. I came from a competitive mindset. I'm like, man, I gotta find out what went wrong and fix it. But if you're not and you get hurt, you're like, forget this sport. You know, and that's really not what you want people to think when they think about jiu-jitsu, you know?
Right.
And then you're going to have guys that, like you say, just do it for fun, do it for fitness, or maybe if you're going to be a competitor, those are three different people. And you're going to have...
Very true. Yeah. And not everyone in your gym, the 2% are going to be MMA fighters. The 5% are going to be like doing jiu-jitsu tournaments. If you can fill the room up with a whole bunch of people and create a community where we're all doing jiu-jitsu and loving it, it's going to attract more people to your gym.
Yeah.
And, we were saying before the break, it was about like winning medals to market your school or being a good coach. And it's like, yeah, you can get medals and you can be a good teacher, but if you don't have what it takes to market your school and have the systems in place to run it, it's not going to survive.
Well, it's great to have the high level guys in your gym, the higher belts and stuff, but I mean, a lot of us, sometimes forget we learn a lot from the white belts too. We learn a lot in training with them. And, I see things all the time and stuff. People come from different backgrounds and different styles. And, I'm always ready to roll with them as well. Even myself trying to come up in the ranks and stuff, we learn a lot. It's always good to have them around. Yeah.
It's always good to have people with human beings around, but it really comes down to human beings and you're meeting new people, regardless of what they're showing you on the mat or helping you. They're like, hey, I can teach you how to wrap your knee because you have a knee injury. I was listening to your story it's the people that you meet in jiu-jitsu. That's amazing.
Absolutely.
Well, it's like any given day, regardless of your belt color, you can get tapped by anybody. But right. I always tell the thing I like the most is regardless, like obviously you're a black belt and I'm not, but like there's always something to learn. Like even if you think you know something, there's always something to learn in this sport. It's like never ending, It's not.
Yes.
I know some other martial arts, they've got predefined katas and that's what you do. But like this sport, there's always something. Even when you think you know something, like somebody will come up with something totally new and you're like, wow, I should have done this. Like, yeah. I mean, we went to a seminar.
You forget stuff.
Yeah. You go to a seminar and you get reminded of like simple stuff, right?
Yeah.
So there's always something to learn.
Yeah. Or just like even, one of our coaches is saying too, just like the cross choke, just, the X choke. That's the one that we start working, most of us start working on our first day and that's the one that takes us the longest to get right, Yeah. And we work it the most and there's so many, positions. Sometimes we forget, we work a certain game and we get injured. We have to start working a different game and, there's always something.
A shout out to Iwano on wrist locks.
How about a shout out to Marcelo on that kimura yesterday?
That was wicked, man. My shoulder still hurts.
Right. he was the same thing. We did a seminar yesterday with like an OG Carlson Gracie team, and he just did this kimura, and he was just kind of venting about real quick. He was saying, you know, that the kimura is not a small, a big man's move.
Yeah.
I heard this the other day, and he was like referencing the UFC and Joe Rogan, how he's a mouthpiece and what he says a lot of people take for gospel.
Yeah.
And he was like showing these little techniques just to make an improvement. It's like, dude, I've been doing this for a long time. That was awesome.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Small stuff too.
Little details.
Yeah. Little details. Yeah.
Right. So Tony, let's get to, what you have going on, currently. I know you have a lot of things in the works, and
yes,
why don't you share that with our listeners?
Definitely been operating the website since 2004, soulfight.net.
Mm-hmm.
And Soulfight has always been like, you know, that like surf culture, jiu-jitsu, you know, the expression of that, you know, that whole thing. And I recently took on a partner, and we're going to do some things in 2012. And I was talking to Owano, I'm like, yeah, I'm really going to go for it. Before, I mean, from now, it's just been like marketing DVDs and you know, events for jiu-jitsu.
Right. And you also do, I know you have private, I guess it's called private marketing for jiu-jitsu academies, because I think if you go to your SoFi.net, it's got something that comes back on there.
Right. Recently, during my whole like undergrad and graduate school work, you know, I've been doing martial arts and owning my own academy in Philadelphia and just doing seminars and learning so much about how to make a successful martial artist run a business.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, how unique martial arts is to any other business. And I started Fischer Prada Marketing recently and developed a course on how martial arts school owners can better market their school, develop better leads for their school,
mm-hmm.
improve their sales systems when the students are there, and then help with retention rates. And it's been very successful to the point where I had to put the brakes on like capping the private membership
mm-hmm.
because, you know, my new clients that are like, martial arts organizations, so I'm very busy with it.
That's good.
It's a good thing.
Yeah. Well, even you know, myself personally, we're sitting down with my coach, and we were talking about you know all the reasons you know people you know we lose people from you know in the sport and the academy and stuff. And he was going over it, and I can remember you know in all this time I've been training, almost hitting every one of those you know little barriers and stuff, and I was laughing about it. And you know, yeah, there's so many reasons why people leave the sport, and definitely retention is, you know, one of those things. And it's very fulfilling for me to see, you know, old training partners come back and right. stuff. You know, people, you know, we were always at it on the mats, you know, 2-3 times a week, and then they take a year off and they come back. And again, I guess I'm starting to see those people come around. It's good, you know, Crail right here is one of them, you know. he was there in the beginning, and then, you know, how long were you off?
I don't know, a little bit.
A little bit, but you know.
Yeah.
Back.
All right, it's all right. Put that on there. I'm almost dying. Put it on there. That's cool, man.
Hey, but you came back. You came back with a vengeance, too.
Came back with a six pack. You're like, what?
I don't know. What is this guy doing?
What this guy been doing?
You know, what diet is he on? But it's good to see people come back and stuff. You know, yeah, we're talking about the relationships and the friends that we make on the mat. And,
yeah.
And I can't think of another place where a lot of people that would not see each other in the outside world are equals, you know, in right. one little space, you know.
That's it. And then with the beginning of the conversation, we talked about technology. With the DVDs that I have marketed through Soulfight and through Buddha Videos and the different distributors, the Fischer Pretum series and the BJJ Seminar series, there are specific topics on specific content in jiu-jitsu. I modeled it after the old judo books in the 70s where they take one throw and just have a whole thick book on the one throw, all the different setups. And it's helped the 50-50 guard, the Sampalo approach, the passing the guard. It's like, this is some high-level content about what's happening now in the sport based on that, and also my teaching experience as an educator, being able to structure the stuff. And it's got out to the whole world. So that I get contacted through Facebook and through the emails. I have students all over the place, and mm-hmm. they keep coming back. It's great.
You got a good DVD on drills too?
Yeah, I figure drills are so important, yeah. But let's put up a DVD. And the one competitor had 40 drills. I go, man, I can put like 180 on one DVD, put some cool music and help out a lot of people that way. People that have been injured, getting back to it. Yeah, a lot of school owners. I'm like, there's no reason why your classes are boring now.
Yeah. You know, the weird thing is obviously we all do jiu-jitsu here, but I mean, still a small community.
For sure.
You know what I mean? I mean, I know like everyone makes this big deal about Fox on UFC, which is a big deal for a lot of people. But even people that were, you know, texting me when that fight was going on, they're like, this is crazy. I can't believe he got knocked out so fast. But it's still a small community, right?
Yes.
Yeah, but too, even Dana White was saying he's glad that, you know, he put that fight on for the Fox show instead of, you know, the last one, the Shogun Dan Henderson. Because Dana White didn't believe that you know, the Fox fans were ready for that type of event.
Well, I don't think he knew what kind of fight that was going to be yesterday, but that was, I mean, that fight was wicked, man.
That was
yeah. I really wish I would have observed it, because it was one, they say, one of the best ones. Another one's at the time, but the whole thing on Fox, I wish it could have gone longer.
Yeah,
but you know, it's just a little taste. So it's how you spin it, and but that's how it's being spun right now.
You know, but it is what it is, man. Yeah. It's like in this sport, there's always on paper you can look fantastic, but you know, you get hit in the back of the ear, man. Down you go.
Yes.
So,
but there's a lot of people that are in their communities that, you know, can be exposed to jiu-jitsu or martial arts. Huh. And there are a lot of people. And there's a lot of reasons to gravitate towards martial arts because of everything it does for you.
Yeah.
And I think it really comes down to creating an environment in your community and exposing people to that. Yeah. And then knowing how to keep them there.
It's definitely a growing sport. Yeah. I mean, like I said, we're a small community and we're involved in it. So when we all get together for our promotions or whatever and we see all these people that do the same stuff we do. But, I mean,
yeah,
I remember like back in the like 90s or whatever, like kung fu or karate was a thing, right? You sit there and watch a kung fu flick and you can go out there and beat somebody up. Like, times have changed, though. So.
Yeah. And we'll even talk about promotion. Shout out to Owano for getting his promotion, too.
Yeah, congratulations to John Owano, third degree on his belt black. That was good. Yeah.
Some of us forget that, you know, you get to, you know, the black belt is like, you know, the end, you know, but there's still so much to learn and stuff. And it just shows that, you know, how great this sport is and stuff, you know. That's an accomplishment.
There was, what, 4 black belts handed out yesterday, and then
4 or 5 black belts earned yesterday.
Yeah, earned. Yeah,
Hey,
thanks for correcting me. They were earned.
Every black belt, every Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt is earned.
No, but I'm just saying, it's just amazing. You get there. I mean, you were there. Little Tony was there. Joel Tudor, John Owano. Chris Wolford got his second degree stipend. He wasn't there.
Clark Gracie. Hey, Eduardo.
Yeah.
You know.
Go ahead, name them off.
I remember the names, but the last ceremony was a who's who of what was going on in jiu-jitsu. Salo Ribeiro was there, Hoyler, Fabio Santos, and it's like I'm in this room. And even yesterday with Marcelo, it's like I'm explaining to him, I go, when I started jiu-jitsu when I was a teenager, I said you were in the magazines with the long hair. You're like, you were like my role model.
Yeah.
And then I would go on to become the boy with like the long hair, and John Awana makes the, why'd you cut your hair? And I was like, hey man, times are changing.
Yeah.
But I wanted to meet all these guys on the Carson Gracie team because I come from the Elio Gracie lineage, Hoist Gracie.
Yeah.
It was a different jiu-jitsu, man.
Yeah.
And the Carson guys were just tough. Like, Henri Batech was like my idol when I was a teenager. And I don't even know if people know these people anymore.
Yeah.
Because everything's so different.
Yeah. Definitely a lot of knowledge. That seminar was fantastic. They do have old school style Carson Gracie stuff that just...
Yeah, I mean, it was funny. Look at Wano, and he's on the side, and I go, I know, like, I remember Sperry teaching some of these tricks with the lapel.
I
enjoy so much the history in jiu-jitsu and how it all came about and the techniques.
He said, right, it all loops back around,
it
right?
It does, and I explained to one of the white belts the other day, I go, you know, when I'm always going to have, like, these little roadblocks in my training to get over, and, you know, you got to learn techniques, and you got to go back to the beginning and learn the basics and the new positions and the timing and then the feel, and you gotta resist. But I go, the jiu-jitsu that I'm doing today, I enjoy it, like my expression of it. Like, I'm doing the old stuff, but I know the new stuff, and I know how the competition is, and I know the no time limit, and I'm just, it's me. Like, if I'm surfing, I can do the cutback and just have a good expression session.
Yeah.
Like, I don't have to go out and compete. But when I do my jiu-jitsu, you can feel it. It's a good thing.
And you're starting your own lineage, man. You did a promotion yesterday to one of your students.
I want him to feel that. I want him to be experienced, because he can get promoted. He earned it. He's been with me for almost 2 years.
Yeah.
And he can be promoted at the academy in Redondo. But I wanted him to be a part of the BJJ Revolution team.
Yeah.
You know, so.
I think you gave somebody else earned a purple belt under you a while back too, right?
Yeah. My friend Matt, who has all the DVDs and everything like that, knows all the new tricks. And, you know, he was with me for, you know, 6 years. And I got, you know, purple belt. And he's just in, you know, not everyone's going to be like that. Not everyone can be. But I really do. When people earn something like that, they put the time in. They never question. Like Marcelo said yesterday, we have 2 eyes. We have 2 ears. We have 1 mouth. Shut your mouth. Bow to your master. And don't question your belt.
Yeah.
It makes sense.
Yeah.
Be a student. You don't have to be like running your mouth.
Well, man.
Good stuff.
I better learn something. I thought I had 2 mouths and 1 eye.
So Tony, where can everybody find you? How can we get a hold of you?
Please, visit soulfight.net. That's been the website that I've been operating for all these years. For the martial artist instructors, if you're teaching martial arts, you got to visit Fischer Prada Marketing, like Black Belt Marketing. Mm-hmm. And if you want to train jiu-jitsu, you know, BJJ Revolution Team all over the world, but in Redondo at Elite Training Center.
Okay.
Yeah.
You got a Twitter or Facebook you want to throw out there to people, or just not yet?
Hey, man, you look up in jiu-jitsu, you type in Little Tony, my name's going to come up for jiu-jitsu.
All right.
Got some great DVDs, man.
Yeah, definitely great DVDs. I got some new things coming out. The Mexico seminars coming up. And DVDs. I always say it's like my last one, but there's always a new project in the works.
Right. And then before we go, but why don't you give a quick shout out to all your sponsors? I know you got a couple of those guys.
Anybody that helps me, like I always, I say a tournament, I want that money to go back into the sport. Guys that helping me out are like Kawaii Kimonos. The boys there have a really nice kimono if you're interested in jiu-jitsu with the gi. Grapple Grip, if you're interested in your grip strength and improving yourself. You know, Mike Safai, he has a great product called Grapple Grip. And, you know, Elite Training Center has really helped me, BJJ Revolution Team. And, evil in the spot, you know, that's it.
That's all right.
Well, yeah, man, we appreciate you coming down here, taking time out of your schedule.
Yeah, hopefully, you can stop in again when you got, the next project, or keep us updated on how it goes down there in Mexico. We're excited,
Yeah, I mean, to Mexico, I'm advising those guys to organize, like start a federation in your state. And, mm-hmm. It's your responsibility to have tournaments down there and, pass it on to someone else that wants to do this. So I'm all for that.
Well, just in talking to people, they're hungry for knowledge down there, and they're really, welcoming to our sport. And, there's a lot to be, learned down there, and hopefully we'll hear from you next time and see what you got going on too.
Yeah, if you got a guy fighting a couple weeks before he fights, want to get on here, get some promotion airtime.
Thank you. Definitely. If you guys invite me back, I'm always down for that.
You can always get a hold of us, but if you guys got someone fighting before, I know those guys got to sell tickets too on the way up. And so,
this is a nice platform. You guys are doing some good things here.
We're trying to help.
So I wish you all the most much success.
Oh, appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
All right, everyone. Yeah. We'll see you next time. And remember, you can get the show on iTunes.
That's the Mad Time Radio. Krail out.